sweet caress. Hello, emptiness. I feel like I could die. Bye-bye, your life, goodbye. Bye-bye, my life, goodbye. Bye-bye, your life, goodbye. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hello, and welcome to Sister Act. This is a podcast where two sisters talk about movie musicals. I am one of those sisters. My name is Jackie.
I am the other one. My name is Nicola.
And today we are talking about a movie that turned out to not really be a musical.
Yeah, I felt bamboozled. So we watched All
That
Jazz.
You were the one who suggested we watch this.
Because I thought it was a musical. And it was on my mind because the other week we saw, I mean, I don't know if I should say people's names, Dad's friend in Cambridge.
Okay, in case he's listening.
And he was like, oh my god, you have to watch All That Jazz. It's so good. Yada yada. So it was just on my mind. I was like, yeah, how about we do this next? But one, it was not like really a movie musical. And two, I hated it. But yeah.
Yeah. You seem to have hated it more than me, but I didn't love this. But in part just because it wasn't... I don't really care about Bob Fosse's personal life. And in fact, hearing about his personal life, I'm always like, oh, I forgot you're not gay in a way that's disappointing.
I don't have an investment in his personal life, but I hate him as a person. So watching this movie of him just... It was like... Just... I don't understand how people think this movie is, like, genius. It is so shallow and pretentious. It's just an asshole guy being like, yeah, I'm an asshole, and what are you gonna do about it? Like, and pretending to be, like, so deep and, like, self-interrogating, but it's not at all. It's just a dumb movie. And Bob Fosse is a good choreographer, fine. This movie only has, like, two dance numbers in it. And I don't think he's makes interesting movies that don't have a lot of dancing in them.
Yes, so just to be clear about what this movie is, it's like an autobiography. It's, like, basically the story of, like, Bob Fosse making Chicago, but it's called New York, L.A. instead, the movie that he's making, or the musical that he's making. And he's also making a movie at the same time. And it is very much about him, like, as a genius. Which is, like, I do agree that Bob Fosse has, like, a very distinct style. And obviously to be someone with such, like, an iconic style, you have to be a very, like, you're a groundbreaking and innovative person. But he also, like, we watched Cabaret and we were like, this is not very well directed. And also even, like, Pajama Game. Like, sometimes, like, a Fosse number is just, like, too much. Like, that weird, the number at the... campground. I can't remember what was happening. Oh. There's like the picnic in Pajama Game where it just like goes too far and it goes on for too long. Like he has a very distinct style and it's not one that
because this is the best style.
It's just distinct.
That no one says no to him. And there's a number in this movie that is absolutely insane. And then everyone's like, oh my God, we can't have this. It's terrible and so inappropriate to be put on a Broadway stage, but none of them can say no to him. And then the Gwen Verdon character is like, it's the best work I've ever seen, you son of a bitch. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? This is terrible. It's just that, and he's even aware of it. He's like, yeah, no, I have free reign to do whatever stupid, crazy shit I want. So I'm just gonna do it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why. That's why his movies aren't very good, is because no one tells him to rein it in ever.
Yeah, Cabaret could have used an edit. Like, it's also funny because in this movie he's laboriously editing something over and over again.
And
it's
even
like, you could have brought that care to Cabaret. It's long. Like, that's part of the problem.
That's true. But then there's even a guy is like, you're driving me crazy. Like, it's taking you months longer than it was supposed to edit this movie. Like, it needs to come to a stop. And then he sees, like, the edited joke. And he's like, oh, it's better. Like, Bob Fosse being like, yeah, producers, you should always let me go way over budget and way over timeline because I'm going to do it well. And I'm like, but you don't actually do it well. Like, I'm sure that's not actually what that guy said when he left the room.
Okay. So anyway. So even though this isn't really a musical, I guess we should summarize it as that is the format of our podcast. So let's do it. It started. There's also a, I guess we should be clear that formally this movie, it's like interesting. I actually didn't dislike the stuff that was happening with the weird, like, he's in a strange, Jessica kooky Lange attic thing with this lady in a veil. Yeah. Some, but it is like, there's like a, it's not very, the narrative is not what's important. It's more like stylistic. Like, there's not that much happening, but then we're like seeing his internal reflections on stuff. And there's a lot of like monologuing where he's like talking to Jessica Lange about how he feels about himself.
But even all of that to me felt like nothing was ever actually being said.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fair.
It felt like more wasted time to me. That was visually interesting sometimes, but wasn't actually introspective or reflective at all to me. It was just him being like, yeah, I lie sometimes. I don't know.
Well, it was about how much he hates himself. It's kind of interesting.
Mm. So it starts, well, there's that. I don't know. I don't remember.
He does his whole, so yeah, it starts with like his little morning routine. Outfit. He like always... Yeah, all this like weird stuff is happening. He always like takes his
he does these eye drops,
amphetamines and Alka-Seltzer,
and then looks in the mirror and goes, "It's showtime." And then there's auditions for this New York, LA, whatever musical, and yeah, he's just like, he picks all the women. He's flirting with all of them. He's being annoying.
Yeah, he's, like, leading a dance audition, and we get some shots in the audience of the... It's also, like, kind of mean to the gay guy who's the composer. He's, like, in the audience, and he's, like, so dramatic. When he picks the women, he doesn't give any good singer. He doesn't have a soprano, and that guy's, like, having an aneurysm. He's like, I need the soprano! And also, his wife, or not his wife, the Gwen Verdon character.
Yeah, it is his wife.
But they're, I think they're separated. Divorced at that point.
No.
They're not divorced.
If it's based off Gwen Verdon, they're not divorced. They're just separated.
He's talking in the weird dream space to Jessica Lange about how he, like, failed that marriage. So I assumed that they were divorced. Well, and also his daughter keeps asking him when he's going to get married again. So I don't think they're separated, actually. I think they're just straight up divorced in this movie.
I don't know.
Anyway, it doesn't matter
that
much.
I'm sure his daughter wanted him to marry Anne Ranking in real life, even though he was still technically married to Gwen Verdon. But it doesn't. It's very pedantic. Basically,
his ex-wife-ish character is there with his daughter.
Yeah. And she's the lead of the musical, even though that doesn't actually really become clear in the movie until... much later.
I didn't realize that either. Yeah, there's like a scene where she's like singing and dancing, and I was like, oh, I guess you're in this show.
Her own number in a different studio. It's like, I don't know. I guess that's what Gwen Verdon would do.
But so yeah, he facilitates the audition. He leaves. I don't know where he goes. What does he do after this? Then we get a little
Then he goes to watching the movie.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So he's editing the stand-up, which is apparently seen his Lenny Bruce movie, but he made a movie about Lenny Bruce.
Yeah. And
and so he's, like, watching the edit,
and
he's kind of mean.
This was disappointing for me that, so this was Cliff Gorman, who was Emery in The Boys in the Band, and I was like, oh, wow, like, I thought that all those actors had, like, only done The Boys in the Band and then, like, died of AIDS shortly after. But I was like, I mean, this was 1979. He could have still been alive. But he wasn't gay. So that was disappointing. It said in his personal...
Wait, what?
The one
what did you just say?
So...
what are you describing?
The original The Boys in the Band. You know, that play.
Yes. Yes.
They made a movie of it. And in my gay and lesbian theater and film class, my professor was like, and you know, these actors are great, but you've never heard of them because they all, like, died of AIDS or got AIDS and couldn't work shortly after, like, the film version came out. So I was like, wow, this guy was in The Boys in the Band, and he went on to be in this movie, too. That's great. But he was, like, the one straight guy. Or one of two.
Cliff
but
Gordon,
the other
the
straight
actor.
Guy was playing the straight character. He was the one straight guy playing a gay character. His personal life section on Wikipedia said he and his wife cared for one of his castmates who was dying of AIDS.
And you discovered that today?
Last night when I was watching it, yeah. So
oh,
that
wow.
was...
Well, I see why
you
that's upsetting
you. You were disappointed
for you,
about Bob Fosse not being gay. Well, I was disappointed about
I understand.
Cliff Gorman
I just was confused
gay.
About the timeline of your realization, but now I understand. You looked up this actor after seeing him in this movie because
yes.
you were excited that he had gotten more work. And then...
Yeah.
Much to
and
your
it
chagrin,
turns out that he was... played Lenny Bruce in the play version and won a Tony for it, but then was passed up in the actual Lenny movie for Dustin Hoffman. So then Bob Fosse got him to play the actor playing Lenny in All That Jazz.
Yes.
All this to say that he's been editing this movie for a long time, and then Anne Rankin comes in playing herself, but she had to audition
her
for
name
the
is
role.
Kate.
Yeah. And she's like, do you want to, I don't know, hang out or something? He's like, I got to edit this movie. And then she's like, all right, well, maybe I'll come over to your house tonight. And he's like, oh, okay. And then she leaves. And then he
Well, goes, he's like, I'm going to be working late. But she's like, well, that's okay. And then, yeah, we don't see him working. But after work, he hired this girl who the guy who the gay music writer was distressed about because she's a terrible singer and he needed a soprano. And now he's
and
like
having
shots
with that woman.
And it turns
out she's also not a good dancer. And he only hired her because... he wanted to take advantage of her.
And he's kind of mean to her. She's like, do you think I could be a movie star? And he's like, no.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's kind of mean. I would say that he's terrible to her. And also, this actress is like a woman who had this experience with Bob Fosse in real life in the cast of Pippin. I'm like, that's even more diabolical than Anne Rankin, because you were dating at the time and whatever. But to make this actress relive you treating her terribly, I mean, it's not making. She agreed to do the movie, but it just felt like more sadistic to me. That's what Wikipedia
said.
Are
you sure that it's this same actor? I think that he treated someone in the cast that way, but not the actress playing Victoria.
I don't know. That's what I thought I read.
I think you misread
Gideon's,
something. Because
wait,
it's,
this is the Wikipedia
She's supposed
page.
To be sort of a...
Gideon's rough
yeah.
handling of chorus girl Victoria Porter closely resembles Bob Fosse's own treatment of Jennifer Nairn-Smith during rehearsals for Pippin. Oh, as Jennifer. Okay, never mind. She's in the movie, but as another dancer, not the one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah,
but
he has sex with
the...
her after telling her and that then... she could never be a movie star. And then Kate comes in, and then she's sad.
In the middle
to see
of the night, she's like, oh,
naked
shit.
In bed with another woman. And then he's like, whatever. Basically.
And then I think we get this weird, like, flashback to, like, we're in some burlesque club and his mom is in the middle of the club, like, cooking a big pot of stew.
Yeah.
And he's, like, reliving some childhood trauma of, like, having had sexual experiences as a child tap dancer in burlesque clubs and embarrassing himself on stage with his sexual coming of age. And then he's like having an argument with not Victoria, with Anne Rankin, with Kate, and mm-hmm. say she's like, you're too generous with your cock, and he's like,
yeah, she's
whoops.
She's like, oh, I'm gonna I got offered to go on tour for 6 months, and he's like, well, for your career I think you should do it. And then he goes into the bathroom and she like calls some guy and is like, you want to get dinner tonight? And he's like, who's that? And she's like, Michael from my ballet class. He's straight, whatever. Then he's like, all right, I actually don't think you should go on the tour. Well, first she's like, I wish you weren't so generous with your cock. And then she's like, all I want is to love you. And then they make up. And in this moment, he tells Jessica Lange, who plays like this angel, whatever, he's like, oh yeah, I just tell people I love them all the time, and I don't mean it, because it, like, makes life easier for me. And she's like, okay.
So, yeah. Then, it, like, this movie, again, the plot's not that interesting. Like, he's just making this movie, and he's making his show, and he's choreographing this dance number where everyone gets on their hands and kind of like does a backwards plank walk.
It's not working, and we see it and try it like 20 different times throughout the movie. I'm like, okay.
And then he's hanging out with his daughter, and his daughter is obsessed with him and thinks he's just like really great, and she's like, when are you gonna get married, and I want a brother. And they're doing some, they're like dancing together while he's talking. And he also like does drugs while they're hanging out. And she's like, what's that? And he's like, a mint for grownups. And then he like puts her in a cab just alone. And I guess they have a driver. Well, I guess they're wealthy.
Yeah. It wasn't a regular cab. It was someone either.
It was just a car waiting to take her home.
Yeah.
But the point of that scene is just that like his daughter likes him and it's kind of sweet to see them dancing. And he's making his stuff, blah, blah, blah. He's talking to Jessica Lange in a kooky attic. And then I feel like the next important thing that happens is he choreographs that very sexual number.
I know. Well, first he has that conversation with Audrey. He's like, oh, this plank walking backwards move is not working. I gotta take a break. And he goes into the other studio and she's just like dancing with the composer by herself, and she like does a kick, and then she like pulls a muscle and she goes to the floor, but then he walks in at that exact moment, so she has to pretend that she was just dancing on the floor, because he's already like, oh, I'm only doing this show because you want to do it and you're too old to do it anyway.
Oh yeah, they have some conversation like
which
that.
which is
oh, that's what in this scene. The Gwen Burton in Chicago, like, you want to play a 24-year-old. Yeah.
Because she kind of used
also,
it
also in this scene, we just see the composer's directed as like, I mean, is portrayed as this neurotic little freak again, because he comes into the room and he's like, the number's not working, and the composer's like, what? No, not my music, not working. And he's like, no, it's not you. I'm just doing a bad job.
Yeah, he's like, I might pull it, and he's like, what? Pull my song? No.
and the Gwen Verdon character is like, Audrey is like, oh, he does this all the time, and she's continuing to dance while they're talking. She does some weird laugh where she's like, ha ha, this is what he always does.
And then she's basically just talking to him like, you don't care about anyone. What was the name of that woman in Philadelphia? And he doesn't remember. She's like,
oh, that I was like, doesn't Dorothy. She say something that unlocks it for him? But the thing that unlocks it is she's just like, he's like, I don't remember her name. And then he's like, I've got it. And he goes back into the room and choreographs the dance anew. And then he makes it all Fosse. And so he lets the backers of the musical come see it. And also the Gwen Verdon and the composer. And it's all like sexy and
So the song,
interesting, you know, it's got lots of Fosse poses and hip movements, and you're like, okay, this feels very Fosse. And then
so the there's song like is this called Take Off With Us, and it's like so weird. They're just like, it's like, oh, come on a flight with us. I don't know.
It feels like this musical is the Catch Me If You Can musical. Because then they're like, oh, we should have a hospital scene. Like, they've got one in that, too.
What it feels like to me is dancing, because all the, like, numbers that were, like, original songs were terrible in that.
I didn't see dancing, but I believe you.
And it just seemed like everything that happened was so... like that there was no
plot. It was
plot.
Crazy that
I was
they
like,
were like, should we add...
how could this be based on Chicago? You're just going to add a hospital number.
Yeah. And also the last line is like, and that's how I could own an apartment as a 27-year-old woman in the United States. It's like, that's the last line of the show? That's so weird.
Yeah. But yeah, so they do just like a weird... but cute little airplane number. And everyone's like, wow, that was great, Joe. And then he's like, it's not done. Turn the lights off. And then they've got like flashlights and they're like, now welcome to Air Attica. And then they're like, hi, I'm Sandal. I'm whatever. And they start taking off their clothes and, like, simulating sex, basically. And that's it. They just get
it does have all the hallmarks
naked.
Of a... It's a very Fosse number in that they do, like a kind of sensual but appropriate, and, like, there's interesting angles and movements that it sort of matches the sense of the song dance. And then there's just this extra thing that goes on for, like, 3 more minutes, and you're like, we could wrap this up at any point now. You could have stopped the song. So,
and all three
it's
of
true
them,
to his creative spirit.
The composer and the backers, like, are head in hands, like, what the actual hell is going on? We can't do this. What are we supposed to say to him? And the composer's like, now Frank Sinatra will never sing this. But then they're just like, yeah, it was really interesting. And then he goes over to Audrey and he's like, I don't think they liked it. Ooh, what do you think? And she's like, it's your best work or whatever. And she's like upset and she leaves and it never gets addressed again. It was, the whole scene was for nothing anyway. It wasn't relevant that he added all this gratuitous nudity to the show. We don't know if it got pulled or not. So yeah, that's that big number where up they're naked. And then I can't remember
there must be some stuff
that
happens in between, but there's another big number. Like, this is sort of like the musical chunk of it, because then he's like at home and his daughter and Anne Ranking do a little dance for him. They like perform an original number.
No, it's not an original number.
And it's just
number.
Very cute.
It's everything old is new again.
Sorry, I think they're supposed to have choreographed it. Like, it's their
it's
an original dance piece.
Choreography, yeah, yeah. I feel like they were doing it to like celebrate something, but I don't know what that would be. Maybe they were.
His movie is coming out. He's finally like given up on editing the movie, and but the timeline of it is confusing to me, because then later someone's saying, like, the movie just came out. But they had some premiere. Oh, and he's like, I'm not going to go to the premiere. They're editing the movie, and he's being mean to the people who are editing the movie. But then, like, they just have to do it. So he's like, well, I'm not coming, but make sure they know that this was just a practice, and it's a rough cut, and there's a lot of work to be done. But then it seems like people liked it. So I guess they're going to just release that cut of the movie. I don't really know what's happening, but that's why they dance for him. And he loves it.
And it's very cute.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, he goes to the hospital.
Well, then there's a rehearsal for the show. There's a table read. And in the middle of the table read, there's the sequence where, like, everyone's reading it, but then the sound all drops out and you just hear, like, him touching stuff and moving around. And these clips of people laughing so hard, but you can't hear any noise mm-hmm. that they're making. And then the sound comes back in and he's like, all right, good job, everyone. And then it's a shot of the angel of death, I guess, the Jessica Lange character just like looking over her shoulder like, hmm? And then everyone's running to the hospital, all the backers of the musical, and also Audrey. And they get to the hospital. And he's like, I'm fine. And then he like passes out. So he has angina he's diagnosed with.
They say he's got to stay in the hospital for 2 to 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, they're saying it's like exhaustion, but also like some sort of active heart condition. And there's a moment where Audrey is like with the daughter, and she's like, what's wrong with dad? And she's like, oh, he's just tired. And then the daughter's like, you're lying to me, mom. And the mom is like, I am. And that's the end of that scene.
And there's a
and we never really see the daughter in the hospital. Like, she doesn't really, I don't really know what her deal is. That's kind of like the last time we see the daughter in the real world.
Yeah, she draws a picture and writes a card for
him. Oh, yes.
But we have this montage of him just being a hooligan in the hospital. And the doctor being like, it's like you want to die. I'm begging you to stop doing stupid shit. He's drinking, he's smoking, he's trying to have sex with the nurse, he's having sex with random women in his hospital bed. I don't know.
He's, like, sexually harassing this woman whose job is to just, like, massage his legs.
Massage him butt naked. I'm like, this would not happen in a hospital. I don't know. He brought that woman in from somewhere else.
I don't know. Bob Fosse did have a heart attack. Maybe. I don't know what hospitals are like.
I can't imagine that he would strip down butt naked and get a extensive leg massage.
He wasn't completely naked.
He was.
He was in a hospital gown.
He had a towel. No, he was not. He was naked and just had a towel over his penis. I'm telling you.
Okay, I believe you.
And then things get worse. I don't know. Then Audrey's at the rehearsal and the whole cast is like freaking out and she's like,
Also the people who make the show do some announcement where they're like, yeah, he's like sick and so we're gonna have to delay the production, but please don't get other jobs, but also we don't have that much money to give you, but we love you like a family and we think you're all very talented.
And, yeah, and also you know, John Lithgow is in this movie, and I never really understood his character.
He's like another director, and so they're thinking about trying to hire another director to see this project through to completion because they don't want to lose the cast. And so they like hit him up and ask him for his thoughts, and you know they're like courting him for the job, and they give mm-hmm. him a copy of the script. The guy's like, oh, it's a great script, and John Lithgow's like, okay, fine, I'll look at it. And he's like, great, I'll send it to you. Oh wait, I have it right here. I just always carry a copy on me. So he gives it to John Lithgow, and then there's some sort of meeting with all of the executives where some sort of like insurance agent is explaining to them that like the nature of their insurance policy is such that if Bob Fosse, Joe Gideon dies, then they make money. Like the best chance of turning a profit that they have is just like hoping that he dies and closing the production without ever like performing a single performance. And then they're like not so interested in John Lithgow anymore.
That's why they're hoping he dies. I didn't realize that that was where that meeting went. It was too many numbers for me.
I think that's what, yeah. First they do like, they're like adding together all the cost of the thing. And they're like, it's like $400,000. And it's like, you'll owe that money if he recovers. And you'll owe that. There's like a certain number of days where like, it's like if he dies right away there. I don't remember all the detail. There was like three different scenarios. There was like, he's fine and they continue. He's dead, but in a certain time frame and they don't continue. or he's dead but in a different time frame, and one of the dead situations was best case scenario financially. And then John Lithgow like gives the backer all the notes he did on the script and is like, happy to do this for you because we're friends, you know, like we all want to succeed. And the guy's like, yeah, anyway, we're not gonna hire you for this.
Yeah.
And then John Lithgow was like, this is my treat, but like very aggressively.
Yeah, he's like, wow, I can't believe you would put all of this work in just for a good friend, knowing you would get nothing out of it. And he's like, I fucking hate you. But basically, Joe is getting a lot worse, and he's going to need open heart surgery.
Yeah, there's some lady on like public access television who gives a mean review of his movie because the movie came out. And the guy from the movie studio is like, the movie's doing great. Everybody loves it. It's going to grow so much. But then this one lady is like, I didn't like this movie very much. In my four balloon system, I give it half a balloon. And then he immediately has, when he hears he got half a balloon, he has a heart attack. He's like, get the doctors. So they get the doctors, and the doctors are like, we're going to cut you open. So they do.
Yeah, and like while that's happening, they talk about, oh, he's even thinking of adding a hospital number. And that's what the hospital hop comes in. That they're trying to assure the cast that he's not going to die.
Yes. And also, he and Anne Rankin keep watching this, like, I don't know, 72-hour charity live stream.
Oh, yeah, I don't really know because what's happening. I was like, when's Ben Vereen going to be in this? And then he just shows up on the TV, like, an hour and 15 minutes into the movie. I was like, this is so weird that this was his role. And I, like, thought he was a big character in this. But he's just, like, he doesn't even have a name that I know of. He's just on...
He's just, like, a celebrity in the world of the movie.
And he's like, ah, oh, my friend... what does he say? Because they, like,
a humanitarian. A great humanitarian.
Oh,
my
it's
friend.
Like something creative, a genius or something. A great humanitarian and my friend of blah, blah, blah years. And then they turn the TV off. And this happens twice. Also,
the first time he says he predicts what they're gonna say to Anne Rankin, and she's like, wow, you're so smart. And then the second time,
yeah,
she predicts, and he's like, I've taught you too much. And she's like,
yeah,
what?
And she's like, and what do you mean too much? And then he's like, did you cheat on me? And she's like, yes. And he's like, and then she's like, so what, are we done? And he's like, what do you want? She's like, well, I love you. And then he's like, oh, I love you too, so I guess we're not done. And then he tells Jessica Lange, like, no, I was pissed. I didn't mean that in the moment, but I just didn't want her to, like, be sad when I was about to go into surgery and might die. And, like, you have literally no right to be pissed. You were literally having sex with other women in the hospital, but whatever. So yeah, he goes into surgery, and I don't know, then it's just over. Does something happen?
No, he goes into surgery, and then he gets out of surgery, and he's like, am I dead? And as he's in surgery, he's like, directing he goes into surgery, and then he comes out of surgery, and there's this sort of extended dream sequence where he is direct, like him in the hospital bed is watching him not in a hospital bed, like in his former healthy state, direct a series of dance numbers with his daughter and Audrey and Anne Rankin. And I don't remember all three of these songs. One is like the daughter just being like, daddy, don't leave me, I'm gonna grow up and you'll be sad.
It starts
and Anne Rankin and Audrey both sing solos.
Yeah, they each get solos, and there's also like a song with all the women in the show, with like feather fan things. But not a single one of these songs is memorable in the slightest.
I can't remember. They're all sort of like chastising him.
But I can't remember how any of them go. But
I think they're all mean, but yes. They're not very catchy.
Yeah.
But the costumes are cool.
Some of them are mean and some of them are like, "Who's Sorry Now?" actually, I remember, is like, "Don't die, Daddy. I need you. Don't die."
The daughter one is the...
No, but that's not the daughter one. Hers is Some of These Days. First, it's just like her voice or something while the women are being like, da, da, da. And then she gets her own song where she's got the big boa and the cigarette holder. And that one is like, "I'm going to grow up and you're not going to be there." But it's not as pleading as her voice. But I can't even really remember.
Well, her character the whole time is kind of pleading. And the other two women are a little more like, "You idiot." But in like a way where they're like, "You genius idiot." Yeah. Not like in a mean way.
Yeah, they're like, "God, I love you, and you've ruined my life, and it'll be even worse if you die." It's just like,
and
okay.
Healthy Joe keeps telling, like, sickbed Joe, "You gotta call cut. You gotta say your line. Are you ready to print that?" And he can't say anything because he's in the hospital. But then he gets out of surgery, and he's okay for a bit. But then...
He gets out of bed. There's someone else is having a medical emergency.
Audrey is there and they're mean to this nurse. This nurse like gives him opioids and then he has a heart attack and she, you know, Audrey's like, "You gotta help him." And she's like, "Well, he can't be having a heart attack. I literally just gave him medicine." And then she's like, "I'll take my pay for doing my job." And Audrey punches her in the face. But meanwhile, Joe is just like running around the hospital. He's going into these rooms full of brains and eyeballs and splashing around on this big, wet, flooded basement. And then he ends up in, like, an abandoned cafe and he's singing songs with this older black man.
Yeah. And then...
And then these two nurses come and get him and they're like, "Oh, boy, what's this guy's deal, am I right?" And they take him back to his room. And then... He goes into the telethon in his mind, and he performs a big number, like, with Ben Vereen.
This is when I was like, I guess I zoned out for a second, and then I was like, these nurses just came to bring him back, but now he's running around alone again. And he's like in the staircase, and he's like, "Oh my God, I'm dying, I'm dying!" And then he turns the corner, and then he's in the telethon.
Oh, really? I thought that the stairwell was before the nurses, but maybe you're right. It's a lot of intercutting between him, like, running around, but also him, like, lying there. And then the telethon begins, and he's there. And then that's just a continuous number. No cuts to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Until the very end, when there's a cut to him in a body bag, and they zip it up. And that's the very last shot of the movie.
Which
so he
I
died.
Thought was a good final shot. I'll give him that. I thought the juxtaposition of the big bye-bye life song, but then his actual death is just them zipping him up in a body bag.
Yeah, it's like
it was interesting.
Like a Weird Al Yankovic parody of Bye-Bye Love, but it's Bye-Bye Life, and it's him and Ben Vereen just going nuts, singing and dancing. There's a big moving stage.
Yeah.
It's kind of the least Fosse number.
And it's not even really... It goes on for too long with not much happening.
I guess that's the most Fosse part about it.
Yeah. It starts out with, like, Audrey and Kate are, like, in these weird costumes that they're doing, like, an interpretive dance while he and Ben Vereen are singing this, like, song...
Yeah, they're, like, dressed like the heart.
But then they're also in the audience, and he's running around hugging and saying goodbye to everyone. And then he, like, makes a joke to Audrey, and she laughs, and then, I don't know, it's just, like, nothing's really happening, but it's going on for a while. And then it's over, and he's dead. And yeah. then there's well, no business, dying. Like, show business plays
over the credits.
So that's all that jazz.
And that's all that jazz. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a totally different kind of movie than what we typically watch. So, like, as a movie musical, it gets an F because it's not a movie musical. But
yeah,
as a movie, it's, like, pretty well done, but I don't care about the content.
Yeah.
And that's not Bob Fosse's fault, except that... And it's also not his fault that I watched this after they made that stupid TV series about his life, too. It's just, like, too... I'm, like, bored of Bob Fosse's life. But he didn't know they would do that.
I think I was, like... I don't know. I think I'm biased in my dislike of Fosse. I enjoy his choreography, but even that, I'm like... He gets too much credit. Like, he is very famous, and I enjoy his choreography, but let us not forget that he, like, bought his routines from Black people at the start of his career and, like, was not nearly as original as people give him credit for. And I think that he's very indulgent and poor director and a terrible person. And I think that this movie is just, I was not in the mood to receive it well, I guess. And I was biased against him that I'm just like, I don't know, I found it so uninteresting. I don't think he, like, I'm just like, you're so obsessed with yourself. There were so many moments that I'm like, for a movie that's supposed to be like, this genius, like, whatever, the point is flying over your head of how you actually interact with people. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. We didn't mention the scene I liked, which is when he gets a checkup from a doctor and the doctor is like...
Oh, yeah, I was thinking about that when we were talking about insurance. It was so weird. I was like, what's going on? The doctor's, like, checking his lungs, but he's, like, hacking up a lung himself the whole scene. I'm like, why is this doctor, like, gonna die in a second?
It was very weird. Maybe he was cynical about smoking. Yeah, no, it was. It's not. I mean, it's not something that I care that much about. I agree with you. And he's also just not like. I think that Bob Fosse is someone who, although not entirely through his own creative genius, but in some ways because of his own, like, ability, like, you know. He had the opportunity to break some ground, and he did. Like, if you say, like, do it like Fosse, there, that means something very specific to people, which is kind of cool to be, like, someone whose name is a style of dance. But him as a person doesn't, I don't care. Everything I learned about, like, the man behind that word and that style, I'm like, eh.
I would never argue that.
It doesn't do it for me.
Like, he certainly holds a very important place in, like, dance history, especially, like, musical theater. I just don't like him. And it's, like, I don't know. I've done, like, Fosse's got iconic dances that I recognize and I enjoy. And, like, I saw Dancin' on Broadway, the revival, and I thought the dancing was amazing, but there were other things that I was like, God, Fosse, you're so, like, you can just tell he's an asshole from his work. Like, when he's writing these scenes that they do in the musical, I was like, this is terrible. Like, who let you do this? I don't know. I feel very mixed. I've done his choreography and I love it. But I'm just like, you're not special. I don't know.
I mean, he's a little special.
Yeah, but maybe not as special as everyone tells him he is.
Yeah. That's fair.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. He's dead.
He deserves his fame. I mean, I don't know. I don't even believe in the concept of deserving. Never mind. I take that sentence back. I think we've said all there is to say about this movie.
Yeah.
I thought the daughter was cute.
Mm-hmm. I kind of remember in Fosse Verdon, there was some conflict of his actual daughter wanting to play the role in the movie, and, like, he was, like, an asshole for not casting her. I think that it's better to not cast your child daughter. Although maybe the issue was actually that she was, like, too old or something, and then that would be an asshole or not talented enough. But just if she was a kid, I feel like it would be kind of traumatic to cast her in this movie.
In the movie where her dad... Well, the kid's not in the scenes. It's like the kid in The Shining, who apparently, like, didn't know that was a horror movie. You could do that. You don't need to know that the movie's about your dad dying.
Yeah, but with Bob Fosse, you think he's going to make it a pleasant working experience for anyone? Come on. I don't know if that's even true or if that even happened in the show, though. I was just kind of thinking that. But the actress playing the daughter was good. She was cute.
And a good dancer. All right, well, all right. That's all that jazz.
Yeah.
We've recapped
Hopefully
it.
Hopefully next week we'll watch a good movie.
Yeah, we better. All right, well, bye. Right. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast, and we'll keep doing it. Bye.
Bye.